Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't wanna.
All right.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in BC. It is Saturday, the 4th of June, Anno Domini 2016, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes, and we have Gabe with us, the newest intern.
Come on, jump in.
Say
there.
Your name.
Hello, my name's Gabe. I'm a first-year master's student at the Eastman School of Music, and I'm here shadowing today.
Very good. What is your instrument? Or
I play saxophone.
Very cool. Very cool. Very. You know Andy Weinsler? Yeah. All right. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. It's the 4th of June already.
Yeah. Where's June? Year's almost half over with.
You know, the 31st of May doesn't seem like that far into the year, but the 1st of June,
yeah,
it's then, suddenly...
Well, it's because you're hitting Memorial Day.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Okay, that's the official, unofficial start of summer.
Right.
And that usually... June, July, and August are usually gone faster. Where'd it go?
Yep.
I mean, right now, June for me is already looking, you know, booking up with stuff to do and everything else, and it's like, yeah, forget those weekends for doing this or that. It's... Ain't gonna happen.
Yep. All right, less than 2 weeks after more than 177 million LinkedIn user passwords surfaced, security researchers have discovered three more breaches involving MySpace, Tumblr, and dating website Fling that all told bring the total number of compromised accounts to more than 642 million. The cluster involves breaches known to have happened to Fling in 2011, to LinkedIn in 2012, and to Tumblr in 2013. It's not clear when the MySpace hack took place, but Troy Hunt, the operator of Have I Been Pwned, the breach notification service, said it surely happened sometime after 2007 and before 2012, but of course it could have happened as early as 1996. All four of the password dumps are being sold on a dark web forum by Peace of Mind, a user with 24 positive feedback ratings, 2 neutral ratings, and 0 negative ratings. That's an indication the unknown person isn't exaggerating the quality of the data. The mega breach trend is troubling for at least a couple of reasons. First, it demonstrates that service providers are either unable to detect breaches or are willing to keep them secret after they've been discovered. Second, it raises the unsettling question, where will the trend end and if additional breaches are in store for before we get there? Of the 4 recently discovered breaches, the one affecting the most number of people is the MySpace hack, which compromised 360 million accounts. While that's the biggest known breach to hit a single online service, password cracking experts have already dismissed the value of the compromised data. That's because MySpace engineers truncate passwords to 10 characters and convert all letters to lowercase, so you're really not as likely to be to have the same password on another site. But it does give them a leg up in guessing your password if you've used the same one. Still, the MySpace dump, like the others recently unearthed, is likely to create a problem for many of the affected users who employ the same user ID and password on other sites, which, if you've listened to the show for more than 7 minutes, you know is horribly bad. Readers are among the who are among this group, listeners who are among this group, watchers who are among this group, users who are among this group should change their passwords as soon as possible. So, our poll of the week. It's soundbites.org, and that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is 642 million passwords hacked this week. Although, of course, it's really over the last 4 years. And the choices are, I've already changed all mine, I'll change all mine right now, maybe I'll get around to it, I'm way too lazy to change passwords, and I don't care if I get hacked. Yeah, so far we've got 22 votes, and maybe I'll get around to it as number one. Of course, maybe I'll get around to it I don't care if I get hacked and I'm way too lazy to change passwords are really all the same answer. It's an important thing to do. And, of course, if you have more to say about this, and I'm sure you do, you can go into the forums, scroll down on the right, and under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the first link there is the forums. If you click on that, it will take you to the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And right now, at least, the first item under poll discussion is for June 16, 642 million passwords hacked this week. So far, we've got four posts. And for those of you who are in that forum and talking, please stop focusing on the fact that one of the hacked sites was MySpace and focus on the fact that LinkedIn and Tumblr were also among them, and that people who use the same password on all those sites are now horribly compromised.
And that brings the total number of breaches, breached accounts to almost a billion. 977 million accounts have been breached. And I have two of them that have been breached.
Congratulations.
One of the problems is that virtually every service wants your email address as your account name.
Right, because it's guaranteed to be unique. They don't have to do any additional work on that.
So that means there's only one thing protecting your account, and that's your password. And so, you know, by using the same username on every service, which you almost have to do, it's really hard for you to come up with different usernames. Doesn't Google have a thing where you put a character in and it ignores anything following it?
A plus sign.
Yeah, plus signs.
What I really love about that is that it lets me, if I think some place is going to spam me, so let's say I wanted to go to Adobe, right? And Adobe says, oh, give us your email address and we'll send you this free thing. Well, I know they're going to sell that email address or whatever. So instead of just asknick@gmail.com, I will say my email address is asknick plus the plus sign. asknick plus adobe@gmail.com. My email still comes to me without any problem, but because it says plus Adobe, if they sell that, I now see what they've sold it, who they've sold it to.
And that technically counts as a different username from your Ask Nick plus Amazon.
Exactly, and it also means that although it all comes to me, I can now filter it very easily.
Yep.
Right, so I can then say, okay, I've gotten my thing I wanted from Adobe. Now I'll just add a filter that says anything else that comes from them, just throw it away. That way, if they sell it or whatever, it's just done. So the other thing is that many places like Google ignore periods. So if I were nick.francesco@gmail.com, it would be just like I was Nick Francesco.
Mm-hmm. But it's easier to tell people and easier to figure out what it means.
Right.
Until you have too many of them.
Right, exactly. So you can do that. If you have a Gmail account, you can very easily add that after the username, before the @, you can add a plus sign and really anything you want to say, and it will still come to you. So if when you're signing up for someplace, you know, Facebook, asknick@gmail.com, you can do that and at least have some idea who they've sold your stuff to or easily filter it after that. Anyway, if you'd like to discuss this or dang near anything else, please feel free to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
So everyone should go to Have I Been Pwned, and I've posted the link on our website. Put in your email address and see what's happened. And hopefully, because I got the LinkedIn message last week. So especially when the LinkedIn breach occurred in 2012, you know, they thought it was only, what, 8 or 10 million were lost.
Right.
Now that someone is actually selling it on the black market, and it was 100 million or some ridiculous thing, 164 million.
Right.
You know, many, many more people. And so they sent out another email. You should have already changed your password back then, but probably not a bad idea to change it again now.
Right.
So you can see what accounts. And use your personal account, your work account. You know, maybe check your wife's account for her. And any email address you used to have, say you were on Roadrunner once and now you're on Frontier, check your Roadrunner address because you may be using similar passwords now with your new email service. And you want to make sure you don't do that.
Right.
So you got breached in LinkedIn also. I've got Adobe in LinkedIn.
Email address. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's the real issue here becomes how badly you manage your passwords. I don't know how to put it better than that. The reality is this. You should never use the same password on two separate websites. And that includes your bank and every place else. And I know many of you are sitting there saying, I'm too stupid to remember a bunch of different passwords. A, no, you're not. I'm not going to buy that. That's just lazy talking. And I'm not going to believe it. You're not stupid. Don't pretend you are. That I have no time or anything patience. For that. It's patience for that at all.
Or diction,
clearly. I have no word. Use your words. I really have no patience for that at all. And there are lots of, if you really feel you are too stupid, then there are lots of password managers out there that you can use. You don't have to remember them all in your head. And we've talked about them often enough on this show. It's not like they should be a surprise to you. I really feel passionate about this. You can tell. The only way you keep yourself safe on the internet these days is with good password management. And using additional tools like two-factor authentication on sites that allow that. So please, be smart about your passwords. To the phones, our first caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark, what's up?
Hi, I took a little bit of your advice, and I tried Linux on an old laptop that I've got.
Yep.
And I tried Linux Mint Rosa.
Yeah.
And I put that in. Worked really good. It's you know, not a fantastic interface, but it worked pretty neat. And then nice. I said, why don't I try Ubuntu? So I put Ubuntu on there. And I kind of run them side by side, dual boot.
Yep.
And I like the Ubuntu, but the problem I'm having with both of them is I can't get a wireless driver to work. It's got a Broadcom wireless adapter in there.
Yeah.
And I cannot. And there's a few solutions on in the forums.
Yep.
But way beyond my comprehension to do. It's a little bit beyond my scope.
Probably the best thing for you to do at this point is to, it's a laptop, yeah?
Yeah.
Great. Bring it to Lugor.
Okay.
There's a local users group called Lugor, the Linux Users Group of Rochester. Okay. And again, they do not keep their website up at all. So I can't tell you exactly where they are now, but you can go to their website and figure out maybe where they'll be next month.
Apparently, it's the third Thursday of the month, if I remember right.
Yeah, so do I. But they clearly do not keep the website up at all. But at any rate, the last one they have is from March. But go there and they have forums and they have everything else, so you should be able to at least figure out when they meet. And there are people there who, bring your laptop. They'll help you right there.
Okay.
One of the other things you can do is buy a new, say, USB wireless adapter that already has Ubuntu drivers for it.
Okay. That might be a solution.
Right. If your laptop has, not micro SD, the other one, SD cards?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They used to at least make wireless cards that fit in those as well. So, take a look around, maybe a USB. So now you've got a dongle on the end, but honestly, so what?
Yeah, really. That's beyond, worrying about. For me, that's not a big deal.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that the wired connection still works.
Yeah, it works fantastic.
Yeah, so you give those a try, and give Lugor a try if you can't figure out when they meet or nobody... There's a contact us link, so
maybe somebody will get back to you. And the other funny thing is I had an old HP desktop.
Yeah.
And it's got 4 gigs of memory. It's got a Athlon dual core, AMD Athlon dual core live processor, 2.4 gigahertz.
Sure.
And I tried it on there. I put Linux Mint on there first, and it installed and worked great. But when the monitor went to sleep...
It didn't come back up.
It won't come back on. And yeah. I had to sit there, turn off the monitor, and hit the input button. many times until it found it again. So I tried Ubuntu, and it works great. But anytime I open that top menu, the one that has a search in it, it makes the screen go really weird, and all the icons are jagged, and I don't know what's going on there. I think that's a video driver problem.
It is a video driver problem, and it is likely that either it recognized the wrong video card, or there's something not quite right with that video card.
Yeah, I was, like I said, I was experimenting on there, but I tried the 64-bit on there, and it worked great, but the same thing happened. So I thought maybe it's not ready for 64-bit, even though it was a 64-bit processor. So I put the 32-bit on there, and it does the same thing. So
Yeah.
There are also Linux workshops at Interlock Rochester, which is one of our local hackerspaces, Saturday, June 18th. So what is that, 2 weeks from today? While we're on, so hopefully they'll all be listening to us.
Yeah, exactly.
From 12 to 4. They're also doing a basic Linux question and answer.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks for the information.
Yep. Good luck.
Thank you.
And congratulations on jumping into Linux. It's a very cool thing. And you're right. You know, it really depends on the hardware that you have as to how useful that's going to be. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Gabe the intern, and you. It is 21 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we have Gabe the intern. And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. My phone updated last night.
Yeah, I did look, and mine is wants me to finally update.
Yeah.
I went and checked, had it check. I don't know why I didn't already. But now I got to do it. Does it take long?
Takes about half an hour.
I can squeeze that in.
If everything goes right.
If everything goes right.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is Dave and I have the same phone. We have the Samsung Galaxy S5. And they updated from Android version 5, which is Lollipop, to Android version 6, which is Marshmallow, which came out almost a year ago. But one of the things that's been happening is... and one of the reasons that Google is behind Apple in some of this stuff, Google partners with phone makers and with carriers, whereas Apple just says, this is the newest operating system, we're just going to give it to everybody. When you have an Android phone, it goes through the carrier and the
handset maker
so that they both have to deal with it before it can be given to you. So in our case, it was both Samsung and Verizon. So because of that, many Android people are behind the latest version, which is not that big a deal except for the security features. So this is being attacked in two ways. One is Google is talking about putting together a website that will shame, you know, that simply says, yeah, Verizon's 4 versions behind or 2 versions behind or whatever it is. And the FCC has noticed, and they're saying, well, if this is a security thing, we want to know why it's taking so long.
Mm-hmm.
And so they announced this week that they're going to start... an investigation, and then magically, my phone gets an update. It's magic. Pure coincidence, I'm sure. So I did the update, and it went very smoothly. It took 25 minutes or so. I just let it happen and did some other stuff, and every once in a while, I'd look over and see it was still working. And when it was done, I had my phone plugged in. So that was nice, but I don't know that was necessary as such, but I did it. And one of the things that it now gives me is the ability to do Wi-Fi calling, which I haven't turned on yet because I want to see how much Wi-Fi calling is going to cost me from Verizon. It appears to be free. Well, you pay this, you know, it uses up your minutes just like everything else uses up your minutes, but we have unlimited minutes, so I don't care about that. But it seems to be that Wi-Fi calling...
It's supposed to help when you don't have a good cell signal, but you're, say, at home and your Wi-Fi.
Right, right, right.
Apple has something opposite called Wi-Fi Assist. When you have weak Wi-Fi, it'll use your cellular instead.
Right.
And when they first came out with that, and I think it was OS 9, the month after that, people got giant cellular bills because they didn't know what that meant. So Wi-Fi Assist sounds like you're going to use your Wi-Fi to assist your cell call.
Yep.
Not using your cellular to assist your Wi-Fi.
Right, which is what Wi-Fi yeah. calling does.
So. I was just checking mine. I got to free up some space.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah,
problem.
That was the
yeah.
other problem. I had like, you know, 4 or 5 bytes left free on my phone. You need about a gig.
I got to move it over. Well, I've got an SD card in there, so I want to yeah. move all the photos and
you
everything.
Can do, well, you should do that yeah. anyway.
I thought I had it set up for that way, but who knows? With the other updates,
yeah, right.
things
yeah.
always get changed. Matter of fact, I just did another evidently minor update to mine a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, the ringtones and everything else that I had
We're
set
gone.
Up for to individuals, gone. Yeah, I had to redo. Matter of fact, it even deleted some of the special ringtones that I downloaded.
Yeah, I had that one a while ago. It was
pain in the butt.
Terrible. Yeah, yeah, and it lets you do video calls over Wi-Fi too. So that's actually pretty cool.
I have been using what they call the HD part.
Right, that has to be turned on first.
Yeah, that does make the calls a lot clearer and everything else.
Well, I guess
that I have noticed because. Quite a few folks will all of a sudden pop up in the upper left-hand corner. When you're talking to them, you'll see that it's an HD connection.
Oh, yeah, yeah, all right.
So,
I have to do
nice.
That. Yeah. I have to admit that too many years of standing in front of the amps at outdoor concerts has left my hearing.
What?
Less, exactly, what? Exactly.
But you know what I've been also looking at, though?
Woodstock, baby. I didn't care. Nobody cared at that in those days.
August, the end of August, beginning of September, will be the Galaxy 6 Note.
Yeah, I'm looking at that, but I think my next phone's going to be a Nexus phone.
Really?
Because then you don't have to worry about who the carrier is or who the manufacturer is. It updates directly from Google.
Okay.
So I'm going to, you know, when it's time, I haven't even bothered to look now to see what phones they have or anything else, right? Mm-hmm. But once I feel it's time for me to upgrade... I'm going to start looking at their phones because...
Well, I've only been looking at the Note because it's a little bit bigger screen.
Right. Right. And so I don't know. I don't know what Nexus phones have in terms of size or, you know, how much memory they have and all of those things, which are important too. Clearly, the 32 gig I have now is not big enough all the crap I want to keep.
I got to do 60. I think I'm... Because it's going to come out with different versions. Yep. The 32, the 64, 128.
Always get the next bigger one than you think you need.
Why? You know, that's why I'm going to go over to the 64 on that and then put a bigger SD card in it. Because the 6 Note... We'll have the capability of putting an SD card in.
Right.
So I'll just get whether it's an 8 or, you know, whatever size SIM card for that, because I like to keep photos there for a while, and then I just move them on up to iPhoto.
You mean up to Google Photo?
Yeah, Google Photo.
Well, I have it doing Google Photo automatically. So every picture I take automatically goes up.
Yep.
And same also, I'm saving them to the SD card. So I did have more room free than you probably do on my phone. But I got rid of a bunch of crap. I have things that I have never actually used. You know? I download something. Oh, that looks cool. I'll download it and play with it. And then I never play with it. And I never take it off the phone. And, you know, so I was, you know.
Well, I've got this one app for uninstalling. And you can go in and uninstall, like the Google Newsstand.
Right.
Allows me to delete that and some of the other stuff that it's like.
Well, and the other part of the problem is there's so much cruft that Samsung puts on your and Verizon.
Bloatware, as I put
right.
it.
And Nexus doesn't have any of that either.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I'm looking. I mean, like I said, I haven't, I haven't really looked at what phones they have. They may be junk. But that's, you know.
Well, like I say, I'm definitely going to try, because I like the Samsung. I've been very pleased with it.
Yep.
The coverage, and everybody, my family and everybody else is on Verizon.
Yep.
So it works, and I'm able to answer questions for individuals. It's amazing, even at work. Dave, you're the computer guy. Here, I need to figure this out. I'm sitting there, usually on break or lunch, helping people figure out different problems that they're having now with their cell phones and even a couple tablets.
Yeah. Well, I was at Rochester Google the other day, and one of the guys was saying, you know, my phone doesn't do Google. Doesn't do the okay followed by the word Google thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I said, yeah, it does. He said, no, it doesn't. I said, yeah, here, give me. Set up, blah, blah, blah. Look, you have to turn it on. Boop, turn it on. He went, this is great. This is great. And I think he wore his whole battery down just going, you know, okay, followed by the word Google, which I won't say out loud now, yeah. So that, because whoever's listening. And he was making it do things and all that stuff. It was just very funny.
Well, the other thing, though, is, you know, while I'm doing that, you know, at work and that, helping set folks up with that, just some of the other stuff that I've discovered, you know, others. Like features, like the HD and that, when I'm doing that, because, you know, there's a lot in there. And like you say, to take the time, that's one thing I will give Verizon. They offer a lot of great classes that you can go and get other information, because just like a computer, you know, there's so many features in there. You could do multitasking and everything else, but most of us don't take advantage of it.
Right, right.
You know, and other apps and everything else.
See, I admit I'm a cynic. I before I'll install something or upgrade something, I need to know what it's going to cost me.
So definitely.
I clearly don't trust Verizon or Samsung.
I do everything that's free.
Yeah.
If it's going to tie a cost to it, no.
It appears this HD and Wi-Fi thing are both free. So
yeah.
We'll try it.
Like I say, the HD, I have been very good. Well, me with a hearing aid, you know what I mean?
Right.
It definitely helps there.
Well, I will do that. Yeah, like I said, I've got... I call it Woodstock ears. Could be Altamont ears too, but Woodstock ears.
You're talking to the choir there. I was there.
Yep. We probably ran into each other.
Might have.
I don't recognize you with clothes on.
I just remember a bunch of my buddies going, "Hey, there's this concert down south. You want to go? Yeah, why not?" And we had my friend literally had a Volkswagen bus. It was brown and white. We all piled into that.
Ours was green and white.
And
that's funny. That's very funny.
I liked the Volkswagen so much. I had, at the time, a 57 Ford, and I wound up, it was dying on me. I still wish I had that car to this day. But I wound up getting an old 64 Volkswagen.
Yep.
Because I enjoyed, and they were getting great gas mileage.
Oh, they were amazing gas mileage.
Oh, I mean, I can remember one time I had just gotten it. And going through the first winter. And, of course, with the Volkswagens, you had to wire open the heaters.
Yeah, yeah.
Climb underneath the back engine and wire open, because my buddy that had the bus told me about that.
Yeah.
All right, no problem. And I was up at RIT. I had to go up there for a class, one of my classes. And I got up there, and it was snowing like crazy. But my little bug, it got right up in there. I had good tires on it, made it through there. I get all the way to class, get there. Canceled.
The big thing about the Beetle, I had a Beetle as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the big thing about it, of course, was it was one of the very few at the time rear engine cars, which meant that traction was amazing. And I remember many times driving along slowly because it's, you know, it's slick, it's ice.
Mm-hmm.
And cars are off on this, you know, $60,000 car off on this side, limousine off on that side, mm-hmm. truck off on that, four-wheel drive truck off on that side. I'm just... ring, ding, 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 going along on my little Volkswagen bug. Nowadays, of course, engines are in the front and it's front wheel drive, so it's really the same kind of thing. So it's equally usable. But I remember. And the beauty, really, the most beautiful thing about the Volkswagen bug, while you were driving, you could scrape off the back window.
You can reach all the windows from your driver's seat.
Exactly.
Well, the other thing that
a short-handled scraper.
The other thing that had, and so did my 57 Ford that I missed, a number of cars, now that I think about it, they had the no-draft windows.
Oh, the best.
For you younger folks that don't know what I'm talking about, instead of having one solid window up front, you had what they called this little wing window,
yep.
and it was called a no draft. And you could turn the little handle and open it up and control the amount of air that came across the front of the, like, the windshield and that type of stuff.
Right.
And just enough air to get in. You didn't have to worry about pulling down the window and all this rain and everything else yep. coming in. It didn't.
You know what works similarly now with the solid windows?
Hmm.
I have the little protectors.
Skirts? Yes, I got them from, what was the name of that company? Yeah, they snap in. They're plastic.
Yeah, they're little plastic things,
yep.
and so you can roll
Weather
down
guard.
The window a little bit when it's raining.
Yep. Yep.
And they work because they let in air without letting in a lot of wind.
Yeah,
they're noisy, but other than that, they're...
Mine are. I got those, and I also got the trays for the floor.
Oh, yeah. That I don't have.
They're custom made, and they pop in and pop out because in the winter months, I mean, your carpets can get so nasty with the... You know, salt and all that.
Right, all right. All right, thanks for calling Car Talk. Thanks for calling Soundbites. Our next caller is Walter from... Oh, no. Our next caller is going to wait. So, Walter, stay on the line. We'll get to you in a couple of minutes. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Gabe the intern, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we have Gabe the intern with us at 44 minutes after the hour. And we have Walter from Greece on the line. Welcome, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. I'm calling just to maybe give some help to that fellow who called earlier with the. Linux Mint and Ubuntu on his laptop.
Oh, yeah, Mark from Greece, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, for his Broadcom, I had laptops, too, and I had a problem because I have Broadcom wireless.
Yeah.
If you go into Synaptic Package Manager,
yeah,
and I would do it through the Ubuntu, put in the search B, like beta, 43. When you do that, up will come up an Ubuntu-recognized driver loader, as well as two other ones, including legacy ones for Broadcom wireless devices. So if he installs those, with luck, he should get no problem.
Excellent. Thanks, Walter. We appreciate that.
Next, he has his video card issue. He might have a proprietary driver part. So again, staying in Synaptic Package Manager, go to Settings. When that pops up, you're going to see all about all the repositories, et cetera.
Yeah.
At the very end is additional drivers. Click on that.
Oh, yeah.
Then it'll pop up. It'll start searching. As long as you're online, it'll start searching to see what additional drivers you may need. And then you can look through there and may find that you may have a NVIDIA card or something like that and get installed on those proprietary drivers for that and take care of his video card issue.
Good thinking, Walter. Thank you. So, really, you need to do the Broadcom first so that you can be sure you're online,
yes,
although I suspect his wired connection works fine.
Yes, he can do it wired.
You're right. And and then that will do it. You're absolutely right. And I just am not at all awake today.
Yeah.
But yes, it's less likely that Ubuntu can't handle his machine. It's more likely that it misdiagnosed his machine when it was installing.
That's correct, because I had a tablet, a laptop, and again, I had an issue, so I looked on my other computer and found people saying, hey, go, you need the B43 legacy driver for that, and just get it on wire, it'll install it. It doesn't necessarily going to dump a lot of, my experience, it does not put in a lot of drivers in that you may need for older laptops.
Right.
Yeah. So I have now then, may I have just two questions, comments?
Sure.
Yeah, I have a Dell. You talked about Neverware for old laptops too.
Right.
Go to make them Chromebooks.
Yep.
Well, I looked at the Neverware site and saw that my laptop is not part of their certified to use laptops.
Right.
So instead, I'm ready to try to use Cub Linux, which looks like they have taken the best of Chromium or Chrome to make it, and then Linux in order to make it a almost like a Chromebook, you know, CUB Linux. And I don't know if anybody's ever tried it around. I'd love to hear it before I go, but I'm going to give that a go and see what happens there.
Right. It looks like a really neat product. I agree with you. I have looked at it. I have not installed it yet. And remember, Chromium really is Linux.
Yes.
Right? So it's not that big a leap.
Yeah, but I guess the big part is that I guess it's going to be very accessible to using the apps that if you want, just like you would go with your Chromebook.
Right, right. The next version of the Chrome OS, 51, they're saying, will allow you to use Android apps in Chrome itself.
Right.
Is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about the Chrome apps?
The Chrome apps.
Oh, yeah. Well, Neverware does that, too. I haven't found one that doesn't run yet. But I am very interested in looking at Cub Linux as well, partially because it looks at least like it combined. You can still do some Linux things as well as the Chrome things. So it looks like it's actually pretty cool. And again, it's free and et cetera, et cetera. So, I'm actually pretty interested in giving it a try. I don't remember off the top of my head what the hardware requirements are, but,
it looks pretty reasonable. Just as like if you were going to be able to run, regular Ubuntu, I think it might run like if you were to get for a lightweight, Ubuntu product like Lubuntu or Xubuntu.
Yeah, I run Xubuntu anyway.
I think it can handle it. And then can I ask you one last item?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. You were bringing up about your phones there.
Yeah.
Your Android phones. Is anybody going to do anything about tablets? Because my wife has a Nemo or whatever it is. I can't remember which one. It's our Mimo. And, you know, it's still stuck on KitKat. And she's been wondering, well, everybody keeps going along. It's not going to Lollipop, and now there's this marshmallow up. And she's wondering, if it's a security issue for phones, what's going to be done about tablets?
Yep, I completely agree. And the issue, again, is that has to do with the manufacturer of the product, which is why Google now has their own line of products called Nexus.
Ah, okay.
And those are updated. Now, obviously, if you bought the first Nexus 4.5 years ago, it might not run Marshmallow.
Yeah.
Right? Well, yeah, right. But, any fairly recent one, particularly if you put a decent amount of RAM in it and et cetera, should be able to do pretty much anything you need to do. But it depends entirely on the manufacturer as to whether or not they will be the ones updating it for all that stuff. It was a two-edged sword. It meant that Google got to market pretty quickly, and lots of companies jumped on the bandwagon, which now made Linux Android the number one phone and tablet operating system in the world. But it also means that we're stuck with this situation, and now Google is doing what they need to do to correct that.
Excellent.
So you'd have to go to the manufacturer of your tablet, their website, and see if there's an update. And what we're seeing is generally no. The older devices aren't being updated. And that's
a simple answer, no.
That's why the FCC and the FTC are both investigating this and trying to figure out to implement rules to require companies to upgrade old operating systems, especially in light of the Android media service breach, bug.
Yeah. Stage fright.
Stage fright, yeah. 1 billion Android devices are affected by stage fright, and only a tiny fraction of them will ever be updated.
Right. The company that makes Lookout, by the way, makes a separate app called Stage Fright Detector, and you can download it and see if your phone is vulnerable. My phone, my Galaxy S5, was vulnerable under Lollipop, but when I upgraded to Marshmallow, I checked it again, and it is not vulnerable anymore.
Nice. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time, and appreciate the chat, and have a great rest of the weekend.
Thanks, you too, and thanks for reminding me about Cub Linux. I know what I'll be doing this afternoon.
Okay. Bye now.
There goes my nap, damn it.
There goes my nap. Nothing gets in the way of my nap.
Yeah, right.
What happens?
Well, you can start it updating and then take a nap.
See, the problem is the cats. They like to sleep on my chest and so they get there and they start to purr, and then the next thing I know,
then
I'm
seeing
with them.
The pictures and
Yeah.
out you go.
But yeah, Cub Linux, Steve will put up a link so that people can see where it is. It's just at cublinux.com, actually. And it's apparently Chromium plus Ubuntu. And like I said, I've seen it. I just hadn't, you know, it's one of those things that's on my list. And now, thanks to Walter, it's at the top of my list. And I'll be playing with that this afternoon. I've got a couple old laptops that I've been putting Neverware on. But, you know, how many of those do I really need? I'll take one of those and turn it into this. I would like to see how much RAM it really takes.
It said one for 32-bit and 1.5 for 64-bit.
Yeah.
But that just feels low because I'm so used to Mac and Windows.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And you know what, though? I have an old, it's got an Atom processor with 1.5 gigs of RAM. It ran Ubuntu like a top, and it runs Neverware just fine. I have to admit, because I have a real Chromebook, all the Neverware stuff seems slow because instead of booting up at in eight seconds, it takes half a minute, or, you know, 20 seconds, and that annoys the heck out of me. So, being able to take that machine and put Cub Linux on it, I think will be kind of fun, and we'll see what that's like. So you can put the 32-bit version on if you have a much older machine, and the 64-bit version if you have the newer machine, and you should be fine. If you have a machine with fewer than 4 gigs on it anyway, 32-bit is really all you actually need. So looks pretty cool. Looks like a nifty thing. You can create a USB or DVD drive. So on my little, what are these called? Netbooks. I don't have a DVD drive, but I've got a USB port, and I can just pop that kit in and make it work. So some pretty interesting ideas and some pretty interesting fun. And I hope, and I'm sure Mark is still listening, because why wouldn't he be?
Yeah,
so
really.
He can try those things before he goes to the hackerspace and talks to them about it. And thanks to Walter. This is my favorite part of the show, by the way. I say this time and time again. I love it when other people solve the problems, because mm-hmm. all of us are smarter than any of us. And clearly all of you are smarter than I am. So that works out pretty nicely. It's a pretty good deal. And I'm pretty happy with my Chromebook. But being able to play with a new toy like Cub Linux is actually lots and lots of fun. So that's pretty cool. We have just about a minute left, or 2 minutes, or
a few minutes. Yeah, three minutes.
Right. So let me read this next news story. The best way to get people to upgrade Windows 10 is to bug them constantly, right? Well, that strategy is backfiring for Microsoft now that the deadline for the free upgrade is fast approaching, July 29th. Multiple outlets are reporting that people are deciding to turn off Windows Update entirely, which means they will also not receive any critical security updates, or indeed any security updates of any sort. Anyone still using Windows 7 or Windows 8 has until July 29th to get the free upgrade to Windows 10. Windows 10 is worth the upgrade if your system meets the minimum requirements, which is basically a 1 gigahertz processor and a 1 gig of RAM, although as we have always said, 2 gigahertz and 2 gig of RAM is much, much better. Microsoft uses a nanny-minder approach to their own detriment, however. The constant reminders are annoying and are now a security issue, mostly because end users never asked for the constant nagging. This is not a new practice for Microsoft. It gets annoying when the OS starts informing you about the new features, reminding you that Microsoft Edge is a fast browser. No, it isn't. Or pointing out some other obvious feature, which you'd find on your own anyway. And so when you first start using a Windows 10 computer, you might have to click a dozen notifications and reminders that are superfluous, annoying, and not even that instructive if you already know the operating system. This already adds to the frustration on most new computers, especially those from Dell and Lenovo, that start bugging you about upgrading to the full version of the security software they installed without ever asking you if you wanted it. Sorry, am I passionate about this? It's one of the reasons so many are switching to Chromebooks. They ship out as slim as possible, they boot in seconds, and they work reliably. It takes a good hour or more to get a brand new Windows 10 laptop into a usable state after tweaking the interface settings, installing the upgrades, connecting to Wi-Fi, uninstalling the apps you won't ever use, disabling some of the notifications, tweaking the color scheme, and picking a desktop wallpaper. MacBooks can be configured with software and settings long before they even arrive at your doorstep, tied so closely to the serial number. That's one benefit to the Apple ecosystem that is tightly controlled by one vendor, although you only get to pick from a few models. Sadly, the Mac is not supported for the latest high-end games, doesn't work for VR headsets, and doesn't fit within a deployment strategy for companies that focus on Microsoft products. That means Windows 10 is the one for most people, which also explains the nagging. When you have a massive user base, you have to get their attention somehow. This time it has created a bit of a nightmare. Say, Microsoft, time to rethink this one? So did the nagging work for you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And that's the end of the mini Uncle Nick hour.
Well, one of the things Microsoft did, I'm seeing if I can find a picture of it, the latest nag screen didn't have a cancel button.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, actually, yeah. The X button actually completely broke their entire user interface. The X button would say yes, would confirm. I hate that. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an entire hour of your lives with this nonsense, but we're going to give you a chance to do it again. We'll be back in just another hour, in just a few more minutes, with a whole another hour of sound bites with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Gabe the intern, and all of you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece, Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Gabe the intern.
Gabe the intern is here. He's not our intern. He's Jazz 90.1's intern.
Well, he might be our intern if I can't make it one particular Saturday. He'll be... You can use and abuse him.
We can abuse him. Excellent. Excellent. He actually looks at... He, you can tell he's an intern. You can tell he's a new intern because we see you said...
He's smiling.
Abuse him. He's going, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to teach him right. He can totally ignore you guys.
We'll break him of that youthful optimism.
Oops.
When you're old and grizzled like
us. I give him an hour and 15 minutes. We should set up a pool.
An hour? I won't give him that. I'll give him to the first break. I'm out of here.
Yeah, right. All right. Here's the deal. We are here. You can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. I should also mention, I mentioned it in the last hour that we are, of course, member supported. We had a bit of a shortfall this year, as we approach the end of our fiscal year, we had a bit of a shortfall in our funds. So anybody who would like to become a member of Jazz 90.1, it's very easy to do. All you have to do is go to jazz901.org. And click the membership button and become a member and join, and we would very much appreciate it. Like I said, there was a little bit of a shortfall, and we'd like to make that up.
What was it? Just a week or so ago, we made a recommendation to this one gentleman and saved him quite a bit of money.
Yep.
And that's where I pointed it out. I said, yep, now if you wouldn't mind, because of all that money that we saved you, if you wouldn't mind going to the website and just pledging a few bucks. We got Jazz-O-Matic, which, you know, you can have the money taken out at any time. And here's the thing, folks. When you sign up for Jazz-O-Matic, say right now, all right, you're moving along and 6 months into it, something happens. You can't afford that. We understand. You can stop it. It's
right.
Not a contract where, oh, you're tied into it for a year. You can get into it for as long as you want.
Right. Jazzomatic, of course, is you sign up and for a minimum of $10 a month or whatever you want to give us, we just take it every month.
It just comes out. You don't have to worry about it. But you know what? You have the pleasure. It's a tax deduction, too. And you get the membership card, which gets you 2-for-1 meals at a lot of great restaurants. You can check this all out on our webpage at jazz901.org. And you also get in on a lot of great features as far as, you know, other gifts. And this station is one of the few that, you know, you can get into a concert. You don't have to do all these crazy things and all that. Rob will offer, say, tickets for the upcoming jazz festival. It's June. It's just a few weeks away. There's going to be a lot of great artists. And you know what? He offers those tickets up to the callers.
Yep.
And you don't have to write, you know, all this and do stupid stuff.
Anyway, this is we're not pledging right now, so
no, we just want to let the folks know that we do there is no time that you can't give.
Right. And some of the other great stuff that Jazz 90.1 is doing. A week from this Monday, June 13th is the first of our jazz cruises.
Yes,
on the Erie Canal.
Those are fantastic.
Yep, Monday, June 13th, and the John Seeger, and the Dixieland All Stars will be aboard the Colonial Belle. And cruise down the canal from Fairport to Shawn Place.
Have you guys done it?
I've done the canal.
I've done the jazz cruise.
I've done it twice, and it is fantastic. I love it. Probably do one again this year.
I want to do one of the lot cruises this this year too. It goes the other way toward
right. Those Bassett. Are also way fun.
Yeah,
those are way fun.
Yeah.
It's June 13th, which as you may know is Juneteenth. The oldest known celebration commemorating the end of slavery in the United States. So that's two things to celebrate on the same day, or perhaps you celebrate Juneteenth by going on the cruise.
There's four cruises this year. And you can get more information and purchase tickets on the jazz901.org website.
There you go.
All I can say is, ouch, this thing is starting to down.
I told you, it takes forever. For those of you just tuning in, yesterday, my Samsung Galaxy S5 finally updated to Marshmallow, the latest version of Android OS. That's been out for almost a year now. And Dave noticed that his is available as well, so he's downloading it right now. It takes about half an hour.
Is that for the notes, too?
Or I assume it's for anything that will actually give you the download.
Yeah.
And, of course, we talked about the fact that one of the problems with this is that while Google makes it available quite quickly, because of the deal that Google originally made with all the manufacturers, it has to go through, in my case, Samsung and Verizon before it gets to me. So it's been almost a year. Recently,
good things take time.
Recently, Google has started to get really upset about this. Because it's a security issue, because there are fixes in Marshmallow that are not available as backports to Lollipop or one of the earlier versions of Linux, of Android. So making sure that you're up to date with the latest version of Android is a security issue. So Google is solving this by, they've talked about putting up a wall of shame where they show who's blocking the upgrade first, because Verizon has to add all their bloatware, and then Samsung has to add all their bloatware. Maybe it's the other way around. Who gets it first?
Probably Samsung.
Probably
they
Samsung.
Make the phone,
right?
And then whoever's the carrier adds their particular stuff onto it.
But at any rate, the deal is that. Mine finally updated last night. But the other thing that's going on is the FCC now has woken up and said, wait, you're telling me that this is a security problem? Well, let's find out what's really going on here. And so they announced a couple of weeks ago that they are beginning an investigation. And then completely coincidentally, my phone updated yesterday. Just completely coincidental.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah. So those of you with Android phones, check under about the phone and see if there's an update available. In the meantime, we'll talk about an update that didn't work particularly well. Good segue. On May 20th, Apple pulled the iOS 9.3.2 point left elbow point J for the 9.7-inch iPad Pro, following reports that tablets were being bricked by the update. Affected tablets show the Kinect to iTunes message that iDevices displays when put into recovery mode, but iTunes only displays an error 56 message and can't actually be used to restore the tablets. The bug doesn't appear to affect any other supported iDevices, and the update hasn't been pulled for any other iPhone, iPad, or iPod. Just the 9.7-inch iPad Pro. Apple's statement on the issue offers no actual insight about what the problem actually is. The company said it was working on a fix and would issue an update as quickly as possible. The iOS 9.3 update was also pulled for a few days because of a bug that caused activation problems for older devices for owners who couldn't remember their iCloud passwords. Those are presumably the kinds of users who wouldn't be installing the developer or public beta versions, so they didn't catch those kind of problems. On Thursday, Apple reposted the update. Apple says that users with bricked iPads should be able to get them working again by connecting them to a Mac or a PC running iTunes and downloading the update from there. I'm not sure how a bricked iPad is going to get an update from anywhere, but hey, it's Apple, so we blindly believe everything they say. Did your iPad get bricked? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
That's one of the things I was thinking of earlier when you guys are updating your phones. And Dave said he didn't have enough space left. That happens all the time on pretty much everybody's phone.
Yeah.
The one thing you can do with the iPhones is if you do plug it into the computer to do the update, it doesn't need as much empty space on the phone itself. So if you're doing it just on your phone, it's got to download the update and have space for the update files and working space to load all the update files.
Right.
So you end up needing a lot more free space than just installing it on your computer.
Right.
And then when you do, if you do have a bricked iPhone, depends on how you define brick.
Right.
Yeah.
Usually it'll say plug into iTunes or it won't power on. You can plug it into the computer and then load the update that way as well.
Right.
Now, since there isn't really an Android computer, can you plug your Android phone in and load Android from a...
No, it upgrades over the air.
It's
an over the air. It's an OTA update. Now, what's really interesting, however, is that I had less than a gig free on this phone. So I had to delete a couple of things. Mm-hmm. But Marshmallow, much smaller and much more efficient and does some sort of rejiggering of your apps. So once it had done all of that and I rebooted, I now have 5 gigs free on this phone.
Mm-hmm.
So it found another 4 gigs somewhere in efficiency in terms of the way it does things. So
like we were talking, though, I think on the next version of phone I get, only because there are so many great things out there, I think I'm going to go up to at least the 32 gig, if not 64 gig version of a phone.
Yeah. Yep.
And one of the things the Apple Updater can do now, if you tell it to, is it can delete some of your applications, install the update, and then reload your applications.
Yeah, Google is looking at that as well. Yeah, they haven't done it yet.
But. I'm surprised they don't create like a temporary storage space. Remember like they used to do in the old Windows, they'd create a temporary storage space.
Well, there's only so much storage on the phone.
Yeah, but deleting your apps. Connected to the network, so web.
That's why they can delete your apps,
create
because they know the app list you've downloaded, and they just download the apps that it had to delete.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. Recently, I noticed my iMac boots up slow, and that's to be polite. So I'm more familiar with, how to compress files and clean up files and things on a PC. But one of the things I did notice is that I had tons of files that I really didn't need anymore. So I went through and carefully over a couple of days deleted them. And I kind of thought, and it was a lot of files, and I thought, well, that might speed things up. It didn't noticeably. So I started doing some research, and it seems that every time a Mac boots up, it kind of does what you might do with a PC when you go in and you want to, clean up files or what have you. Needless to say, I have Daisy Disk, which I don't think I thoroughly understand when I look at it. And I haven't really been able to get any improvement out of the way the iMac boots up. Now, couple of months ago, I bought a new Mac laptop for, moving around and travel.
Sure.
And it boots up the way the iMac used to boot up. I I know there's probably something to do, but I can't seem to fathom out what it is.
Well, in general, disk space has nothing to do with boot speed, unless your disk is absolutely full. So if you've even got a couple of gigs free on your disk, that's not your problem.
So the disk is nowhere near full.
Right. So that has nothing to do with your boot speed. Boot speed depends on how many things are loading at startup. And if you go into system preferences under users and groups and then look at your account, there is a thing called login items. And those are some of the programs you've told it to start up at boot. Or more likely, when you installed something, it put itself in your login items so that it can start up when you log in. And what that can do is it can make that program launch faster when you want it, but it does make the boot process longer because it preloads some of those applications.
Microsoft is notorious for doing that with all of Office. Yeah.
So you get your desktop shows, but it still hasn't booted yet because it's launching all these other things. What you talked about running the clean thing is a program built into the Mac called the File System Checker.
Right.
And it will run if there's an abnormal shutdown. So if you don't shut down normally, the next boot, it will do an FSCK scan, a file scan, to make sure nothing went wrong. If it's always doing a file scan, then there may be something more happening with your computer. And in the utilities folder is a program called Disk Utility, where you can run some basic maintenance scans on the disk to see if the disk is okay.
Okay.
The other thing you can do is there is some cleaning procedures, temp files and cache files, system type files that you normally don't see, that the Mac is usually pretty good about cleaning itself. You can sort of force it to clean that by doing what's called a safe boot. Hold the shift key down before you start to boot, and it will run a safe boot. So a safe boot takes a little longer because it does run a full system file check. It cleans caches, it cleans fonts, so it cleans a lot of that stuff. And that can often make the disk feel faster. But generally what happens over time is the disk is wearing out. It's having more and more marginal blocks. You know, blocks on the disk will fail over time. And that can make the disk slower as it tries to reread those blocks. The newest...
Now, this machine is in its third year. Is that old?
Well, for a computer, that's starting to get old, yeah. If it's still under Apple Care, which goes for 3 years, take it into a shop and have it looked at before the warranty expires. But even after that, the Disk Utility can find problems and fix some basic problems as well.
Okay.
On new computers, what we're seeing is they all have flash drives in them instead of spinning mechanical drives like we're used to. So since there's no moving parts, they are really, really fast. And one of the side effects is it can boot in, you know, 10 seconds or less. That's what Nick is always saying about his Chromebook. It boots so fast, partly because it's loading from a flash drive, not a mechanical drive.
Okay, so my laptop has flash drive.
Yeah, most likely. Yep, all the Retina Macs have the MacBook Airs. Pretty much every Mac except the MacBook Pro non-Retina. Have a flash drive option in the laptop, and one of the things you can do to make your older computer Mac or Windows feel faster is put a flash drive in, so that it can boot a lot faster than that mechanical drive.
You mean that can actually be installed in the big desktop?
Yes. Right. It's a little tricky to replace the hard drive on an iMac because it's the all-in-one sealed box. Tricky for average users to be able to do that themselves. But it can be done, and you can get a little more life out of your computer by putting in a faster hard drive, you know, an SSD drive. Depending on what Mac it is, you can put a solid state drive or flash drive in for speed, and keep your mechanical drive for storage. Because one of the things that has happened is that flash drives are really fast, yes, but they're also relatively expensive. A terabyte spinning drive is you know, $100. A terabyte flash drive is $700-$800, so it's quite
okay.
So a lot of people end up with like a 256 meg or maybe a 512 meg flash drive to boot from, and then a two three terabyte spinning drive for storage.
Okay.
All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Gabe the intern, and you. It is 22 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Gabe the Intern.
And 27 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I believe we still have Larry from Rochester on the line, yes?
I'm still here.
Excellent. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to mention a couple of things, too. You had mentioned you're using a program called Daisy Disk, which shows you your larger file sizes, but it's $10. There's a free program called Omni Disk Sweeper that will sweep through all your folders and show you all of the file sizes. For Windows, there's a great one called Tree Size Free that will show you your biggest folders so you can see what's taking up all the space on your disk.
Okay.
And also be very wary of the ads you see on websites for disk cleaners and Clean Up My Mac or Mac Keeper, Speed Up My Mac. And then there's equivalent PC programs, Clean Up My PCs, PC
right.
Keeper. Most of
every
those,
now and then I'll get one of those, but I avoid those like poison.
Yeah, most of those are I hate to say illegitimate because it's a real program, but they advertise too heavily. They give you really scary messages about you've got all this stuff wrong with your computer.
Right.
They make you they want payment. Right. Okay, but and then they don't really do what they're advertising for.
Okay.
And so it's this class of software we're calling crapware, in polite company.
Yeah.
that it's not necessarily malicious, but it just doesn't do what it says it's supposed to do, and it.
Right.
You got to pay money for it, and you can get better utilities for free or cheaper.
Right, right.
But yeah, so if you have free space on your drive, that's not what's causing the speed issue. It may be the drive is wearing out. One of the things you can do is back up everything, reformat the drive, and then restore it all.
Daily.
Yep. During that reformat, the drive will map out any bad sectors it finds. In order to stop that reseeking that we were talking about, if it comes across a bad sector, it has to try to read the data from it.
Right.
There are utilities. It's tricky to run on a Mac currently. There's one called SpinWrite that will scan your disk for bad sectors. You can run it in a virtual box with direct memory access, but right now it's designed to run on a Windows PC.
Said that's SpinWrite?
SpinWrite, yep. From a company called Gibson Research Corporation, grc.com. He's working
R-I-T-E or
yes.
R-I-G-H-T?
R-I-T-E. He's working He's working on a Mac native version. So right now, the easiest thing is that you take the hard drive out of your Mac and put it on a PC. Also works great with like TiVo hard drives. If your DVR has been skipping as you're trying to watch a recorded show, we hear a lot of good things about that too. But most of these utilities that you pay for, it's not something the average person would get. It's something like a repair shop like mine would do. But a lot of, some people just like, tinkering with their old machine. Remember when we used to tinker with computers?
I do.
And now they're ingrained in our society. And if it's down more than an hour, people are mad because, they can't read their Facebook posts.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, so yeah, try that couple of things.
Yep.
RAM is also an issue. We were having a conversation with a customer this morning. They have 2 gigs of RAM and they have 1 gig free on their hard drive and their computer's slow. And the answer is yes. Yes, it is.
Yep.
But it's also 8 years old. So do you put several $100 into upgrading the RAM and upgrading the hard drive, or do you buy a new computer? And that becomes an interesting trade-off as well.
Okay. Well, I thank you for your help. I've tried to take copious notes. I'm going to go...
Yep.
Back to the drawing board and see what happens.
Sure. There you go. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And I've posted links to some of the software that I've mentioned, and the podcast will be up later this afternoon.
Yeah. I've been having an issue with my wife, her Mac. Yeah, she can't do certain things on her Mac. I said, are you getting any kind of error message? No. So I watched her boot up one time. I said, what is that?
That's an error message.
It's not an error message. Just telling me that I need to free up space on my hard drive.
Okay, technically it's a message.
You're right. It's not an error
it's
message.
It's an informational message.
Right, exactly. I said, you are right, honey, which is the secret to a happy marriage.
Yes.
You are correct, dear.
Technically correct. The best kind of correct.
Yes, yes, dear, you're right. But why don't we free up some space anyway and see if that helps?
Yeah.
All right. And of course I've attached network attached storage to my network.
Yep.
So she can just back up things to there. She's never done it. So I spent a couple hours doing all that for her. Miraculously.
Yep.
All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Brighton, New York. Hi, Larry, what's up?
Well, I'm looking at Chromebooks and how much hardware to be happy.
Yeah.
As opposed to the cheap ones. 4 or 6 gigs of RAM, or and how big a screen?
I went with the 50. For me, it was the screen.
Screen size depends on how old your eyes are. Many times.
I wound up going with the 15-inch.
Well, my eyes are 63 and not good, so.
Yeah, I am. I have two Chromebooks that I use fairly regularly. The smaller one is 13 inches, and the larger one is 15 inches. And both of those are good. The 15 inches actually, of course, a little better. The big thing is you really want a minimum of 2 gigs of RAM, but I've been telling people 4 gig is better. It depends on how you work.
I open lots of tabs. I don't play games.
If you open lots of tabs, you want a minimum 4 gig. 6 or 8 gig would, of course, be better. For the people who only open a few tabs at a time, 2 gigs is fine. Faster.
What is a Chromebook 2?
Pardon?
What is Chromebook 2 as opposed to Chromebook?
All right. Are you sitting down? Yeah. Chromebook 2 is just a name that Toshiba gave their second version of their Chromebook.
And okay. Samsung has one called Chromebook 3.
And Samsung has one called Chromebook 3. There are two different Chromebook 2s, by the way, from Toshiba. The old Chromebook 2 from 2013 and the new Chromebook 2 from 2015, which are, in fact, internally entirely different Chromebooks.
Wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. So, basically, ignore the names.
I found a Samsung Chromebook, too.
Yeah, Samsung makes Chromebooks in multiple numbers and names. So I have a Chromebook. My 15-inch Chromebook is it's a 14-inch Chromebook because it is an HP 14.
Okay.
Now, there is the HP 14 QO34M. There is the Chromebook the HP Chromebook 14 JR, I think. Anyway, there's
left
like
elbow.
There's like 15 different things. What you want to do is go and buy a new Chromebook. That's really all you have to worry about.
Okay.
Again, you want, a faster processor, always better than a slower processor, but they don't have to be the super fast processors you need for Windows or a Mac. More RAM is certainly better. I would say 4 gig is where you should be looking at a minimum. Although, like I said, if you only open a couple of few tabs at once, my current Chromebook that I'm using right at this moment is only 2 gigs, and I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I had about 10 tabs open. It was running just fine.
Okay. One quick yes, no question on an XP.
Yeah.
Would it be worth playing around with Linux in it, or is it just too old to?
What is this machine again?
XP.
It's an XP. I don't remember. It was a Dell.
If you're going to use Linux, then you want, at a minimum, a gig of RAM.
Yeah, it's got that.
And a fairly fast processor. I mean, obviously, it's going to be faster than Windows XP was, so, how slow does it need to be? But in particular, if you're just playing around, and you understand the limitations of the speed of the machine, then any size machine would be fine for playing with Linux. Now, using something like Kub Linux would be great for an old machine. Something like Damn Small Linux or Puppy Linux would be better for a very old machine. Xubuntu or Lubuntu would be better for an old machine than regular Ubuntu. And now we're getting into the speed of the graphics card, right? Xubuntu requires a much lower set of specs for video than does regular Ubuntu or Kubuntu. So Xubuntu uses the Xfce windowing interface, which is much lighter, as they call it, much lighter than the regular Ubuntu interface. So a lot depends on what hardware you've got in that old box.
Yeah, what's the old Dell inboard video card? I wasn't too happy with the video, so.
Yeah.
So I'll pick one that doesn't require a laptop.
There you go. But yeah, playing with it is actually a lovely thing. I keep telling people, we talked, Steve mentioned this earlier, we don't tinker with computers much anymore. Yep. We certainly don't tinker with operating systems because, you know, it's Windows or it's the Mac. But we Linux people tinker all the time. All the time.
I just wanted to be sure that I wasn't going to get totally frustrated because it just wouldn't go.
But of course you'll get frustrated.
And I'll take a shot.
Yeah, there you go. Now you're talking. Thanks, Larry.
You're welcome. Have a great day, Nick.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Of course you'll get frustrated. That's the whole point of putting a new operating system on a computer. You're going to get frustrated, but it will be fun. It'll be the fun kind of
It'll
frustration.
Be new and different and trying to figure out where the heck that thing went to.
Yeah, right. Where it went to and what it's supposed to be doing and what the heck does that mean? But what's interesting is we say, well, I can't learn a new operating system. Again, you're just pretending to be stupid. I'm sorry, but that's true.
Have more faith in yourself.
Have some faith in yourself. You're not stupid. You can learn this, and it's not hard to do. It's not hard to do, and it's a lot of fun to do. You know, we forget computers are actually supposed to be kind of fun. And I don't have a single working joint in my body anymore, so I certainly don't go out hiking and you know, dancing and those fun things.
Why
so
not?
Now fun is because I can't stand on this knee, that's why. But still, you know, I still go out and play with new operating systems. That's fun too. Go and grab an old laptop and go have some fun for yourself, for Pete's sake. It's the way it should be, and it's the thing you should be doing.
I believe using a computer can be done from the seated position.
It can be, and that's where I've been doing it from, except when the cats are on my chest, and then I'm doing it like this, trying to type, I can't see a thing.
Put a monitor on the ceiling.
It's exactly right. Get those prism glasses.
Yep.
You know? All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Gabe the intern, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Gabe the intern with us at Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we have Rich from Irondequoit on the line. Hi, Rich. What's up?
My sister-in-law was just visiting, and she saw me online listening to you guys. And she said to me during intermission that she just got notified. She called her computer repair guy about Windows 10. And he told her, you don't need to switch. You can wait a year or two. And I was surprised to hear that coming from her repair guy. What should I have responded to her? What is she not going to be getting, or in what danger is she?
Okay, what you should have said was get a different repair guy.
Yeah. And that's you're going to be out, what, 100 and...
Yeah, $119, $120 bucks.
Come July 31st.
Come July 29th.
29th, I'm sorry.
July 29th. She's not getting any security updates. So if she turns off updates so she doesn't get Windows 10, she will no longer get any security updates.
Right.
She will then have to pay for Windows 10. And very soon, people are already making hardware that does not connect to Windows 7. There are no drivers for it.
Once more, say that again, please.
Okay, first...
security updates. Yes, I got that one.
Right. So you don't get any security updates. Second, it will cost her $120 bucks if she waits till after July 29th. And the third thing is, what did I say the third thing? People are not making hardware for Windows 7 machines anymore. They're not making drivers for the hardware for Windows 7 machines.
So if you buy something new, it may not work.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. I got to call her up. Number two, please.
Yeah.
What do you guys know about Bluetooth connecting, for instance, specifically? My partner is not even into listening to the radio anymore. And so I'm trying to Bluetooth my very expensive Bluetooth headphones to another device that's connected into my audio receiver. Should that be normally difficult to connect Bluetooth to Bluetooth things?
Here's the deal with Bluetooth. You only get a certain distance. I think it's 30 meters?
Well, it's 30 feet nominally, unless you have the extended range, you know, super antenna one.
Right.
I thought so. Anyways, I'm a half an inch away from the thing,
okay.
Two pieces, you know, and they're both flashing blue and red. It will not connect.
Well,
and I spent over $100 on this headphone, and I get frustrated, you know, word you've been using today.
Yeah. Now, you have two devices that are Bluetooth enabled.
Yeah.
Both of them are set up in discovery mode.
Well, how would I know? They're flashing red and blue, both of them. I believe that indicates a discovery mode.
Theoretically, it does, yes, but you really need to read the directions for both devices.
Do a search
theoretically,
on both
that's
of
it.
Them.
And what happens is they will then find each other. But again, you need to read the directions as to whether there's a button you push. On a computer, it's easy. It comes up and says, here's the new device.
Right.
Right, but on devices that don't have a screen of any sort, there may be a button you have to push, or you know, something else that you have to do to say go make the connection.
It's very interesting. In my bathroom, I have a shower Bluetooth speaker, and my cell phone is 6 feet away or 5 feet. All the time it connects, no problem. But down here, my equipment's more expensive, and I can't get it to work. So anyway,
well, also what's in between you and it. Also, what other things are running through the air, right? If you've got, a dozen different devices. A
microwave oven or a portable phone.
Or Bluetooth mouse or whatever that's also on the same frequency, it may just be jamming it.
And also, some Bluetooth devices can only be paired to one device. So say those headphones are already paired to your phone. You have to unpair it from the phone in order to pair it to something else.
I see.
And again, we can't tell you that without, you know, you got to read the directions in the.
I got it.
Yep.
One more quickie.
Yeah.
You were talking about Ubuntu and Linux.
Yeah.
Are those websites or are those search browsers?
Linux is an operating system. Ubuntu is one version of Linux.
Would you spell those words for me?
Linux, L-I-N-U-X.
UX, okay.
And Ubuntu, U-B-U-N-T-U.
Oh, did I get that wrong? B-U-N-T-U-N-L-I-N-O-X?
U-X.
U-X, thanks.
It's all about the U's, L-I-N-U-X and U-B-U-N-T-U, Ubuntu and Linux.
All righty, so if I don't have Windows 7 or 10, those replace that as an operating system.
They would replace that as an operating system. Now, they're a different operating system, so many of the programs you currently own for Windows have equivalents in Linux, but it's not the same program. So, for example, instead of using Microsoft Office, which you probably paid $700 for, you can use LibreOffice, which is free, but does all the same stuff.
Okay. All righty. One more thing.
Right.
When I want to read a document online, a program keeps asking me if I want to install it. I can't recall the name of the program. But you guys have subtly suggested something else. But obviously, if I can't remember the program, you guys...
It may be saying the Adobe Reader to read
that's
a
it.
PDF file.
That, why must I always install Adobe Reader every time I want to read a document?
You don't. In fact, you don't need to install Adobe Reader at all. You can use any number of PDF readers. We generally recommend the Foxit Reader for Windows because the Adobe Reader has so many security violations that what you may be seeing is an upgrade notice that you have to update your version of Adobe Reader.
Which they do every hour because of the security issues.
Because of all the security issues, yeah.
Perhaps I should delete that and go to foxit.com.
You got it. I don't know if it's... Hold on.
Just do a Google search for Foxit.
Yeah, F-O-X-I-T, right.
Yep. FoxitSoftware.com.
FoxitSoftware.com.
Yep.
And the same with those other programs that they were recommending. Just go to Google and do a search that way. It's an easier way to find it.
And right, as long as you know how to spell them, you can do that.
Well, I would say Google often fixes your spelling, too.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah. By the way, I recently made a contribution, guys, so
that's what I like to hear.
Thank you
so much.
Bye.
Yep.
Thank you so much. That's That's important to us. We want to stay on the air. We want to keep this whole thing running.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually, Fox, it makes a good product. Certainly, many people would say a better product. What's the term they use nowadays in politics? Oh, some people are saying it's a better product.
Yeah. It's not a superior officer, just a higher ranking one.
Yeah, right.
And on the Mac, Apple's Preview comes built into the OS and can open PDF files. What we usually think is that when a website says you need to install Adobe Acrobat Reader, Adobe paid the money to put that there.
It's exactly what
you
happened.
You need any PDF reader you want to view those PDF files.
Right.
In fact, most of the web browsers will now display a PDF in the browser without needing any additional software.
Right. All right, our next caller is Judy from Webster, New York. Hi, Judy, what's up?
Hi. I called about 2 weeks ago about my printer that kept going offline.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and you told me to uninstall it and then reinstall it using a host name instead of the IP address.
Right.
Okay, now I haven't done that because I had a concern about a driver, because if I reinstall it, I'll be getting the old driver, correct?
Not necessarily. If you reinstall the... which are you reinstalling?
Yeah, from the original disk, you'll get the old driver.
Right.
You should download the current driver from the printer manufacturer.
And install that one.
Can I do that without a charge?
Yes. Yeah, if you go to HP's... HP is, in fact, fairly good about this. If you go to HP's website and put in the number of your printer, what was it, 8500, I think you said it was?
Yes, 8500 wireless.
There you go. If you go there and do one of the menu choices is drivers and downloads, go there and put in your product. You may have to put more, like HP LaserJet 8500 or whatever it happens to be. But it will take you directly to the latest set of drivers for your computer, you know, Windows 7, Windows 10, driver, and you get the driver download that matches your operating system and your printer. It's important to match both.
Okay.
And then you download that and you can install that one.
Especially some of the HP printers, you know, it's 8500C, 8500CW, 8500CJ.
Right.
There might be different drivers.
Right. So make sure you get it, and it may not be. It may just say, you know, the 8500C family.
I think it's 8500. I think it's AG.
Yeah. So, but whatever it is, make sure you you'll get that information either from the machine itself or from the manual that comes with that machine. Make sure you have all that information ready before you go to HP's website. And then you just go to hp.com. Like I said, go to drivers and downloads. Okay. Search for the printer that you have, for the operating system that you have, and you'll be on your way.
Okay, you asked me if an error message was showing on it, and there is no error message. The screen just goes blank.
It
goes to sleep and it doesn't wake up.
Right.
You may be able to on that front panel on the printer itself, go into the settings or setup and find the sleep setting and make it longer or even turn sleep off if you can.
Okay, I'll look for that.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck, Judy.
Thank you.
Have fun. Yeah. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Setting up wireless printing is wonderful because you're not running wires anymore, but it can be difficult to get right because of, you know, we set up a printer downstairs, which meant I was running upstairs I was hobbling upstairs to set it up and then downstairs to see if it worked and upstairs. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to wait till I get home, call my wife, make her sit by the printer.
Yeah.
Just talk back and forth. All right. That music tells me that we are done for another week. Hard to believe, but you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray, and particularly Gabe the intern, who for no discernible reason just sat through this whole thing for 2 hours and pretended to... He had a smile on his face. It must have been hard to maintain that, but he did. We'll be back. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites. And don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. And we'll be back in just 166 hours with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the Truly Great. And let's not forget, it's solely member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.